Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Wages jump the most in 20 years. Liz Shuler's message on the infrastructure. A labor secretary supporting strikers. And today on the show, the flight attendants, part of the Transport Workers United Local 556. And later in the show, we talk about preparing for good jobs in the trades. What next week will bring. Welcome to the Monday, November 1st edition of America's Workforce, where we are available now on six platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and most recently Stitcher. We have two guests on the show today. We're going to start things off with Lynn Montgomery. Lynn is president of the Transport Workers Union 556, TWU556.org is your website. And she actually works for Southwest Airlines, and she is based in Dallas, Texas. And speaking of Southwest, we're going to get an update on how they are navigating through the pandemic. You may recall a couple of weeks back, the airline was virtually crippled over the weekend. They canceled well over 2,000 flights. A lot of that had to do with, first of all, workers just burned out, excessive fatigue. A lot of flight attendants retired because they're just sick of what's going on, and they're tired of dealing with passengers. I'll get to that in a minute. There were some technical problems. They had weather problems. You add all that together, and it's pretty much a recipe for disaster. She also says that Southwest is requiring flight attendants to go to a company doctor to verify their illness. So if you're feeling kind of down, you can't just go to any doctor. You got to go to one that the company designates. So we'll get into that. And then the craziness on the airplanes. And it doesn't seem to stop. In fact, I just read a story over the weekend about an American Airlines flight. This was a flight from New York to California. It was diverted to Denver after a passenger assaulted a flight attendant. The incident happened on flight 976, which was heading from JFK Airport in New York to John Wayne Airport in Santa Ana, California. The passenger reportedly punched a female flight attendant in the face a number of times. The spokesperson for the union, this is the Association of Professional Flight Attendants, said that the attendant had multiple broken bones in her face, and they're still trying to figure out what happened. Although there are reports the man objected to wearing a mask in first class, the Dallas Morning News said nothing definitely indicates that the incident had anything to do with a mask policy. He was eventually subdued, had to be duct taped to his seat, and the pilots diverted the plane to Denver so the flight attendant can go to the hospital. And now law enforcement is investigating. Now, the fines here are ridiculous. They're like $35,000. And Biden said recently they were going to double that. I don't know about how far they're going with that. But the violence on the planes is still continuing. There's another story here. Teddy Andrews, and this is a flight attendant based in Charlotte, North Carolina. This goes back to like March of 2020. He wasn't feeling well. This is when the pandemic just exploded. He had a fever almost 105, suffered massive aches, chills, night sweats, was admitted to a hospital. His daughter was by his side. They didn't think he was going to make it. After 10 days in intensive care, he survived. And it was designated as COVID-19. Eventually, he returned to work. He wears his antivirus mask, just like all other crew members and passengers are required to wear. But here comes one bozo saying, I'm not wearing a mask. And Teddy tried to tell the guy, hey, you know what? You got to do it. I mean, we're in the middle of a pandemic. You know what the response was? He called him the N-word. Yeah. Yeah. Saying, hey, it's a free country. I could do what I want. Well, in that case, eventually the passenger put on his mask and the flight was completed without further rage on the plane. And there was no enforcement. And no police met the plane when it landed to arrest the passenger. That's wrong. That's completely wrong. So the craziness is still happening. And sometimes these people are arrested. Sometimes they're not. Go figure. So Lynn is going to talk about that and much more as our first guest. Our second guest on the show today is Tom Jermuska, who's editor of the Labor Citizen, produced by the BMA Media Group, the same group that produces this show we call America's Workforce. And Tom is going to give us a preview of what's going to happen next week. Next week is National Apprenticeship Week. And every year, the Labor Citizen does a special insert inside the November edition that includes stories that explain what an apprenticeship involves in the building trades. And it also, and this is the best part, it has all the contact information for every building trades training center in the state of Ohio, who to contact, how to apply, and get your career started. It's very, very comprehensive. And frankly, I don't know of any organization that does that or does that so well. It's pretty remarkable, and they put a whole lot of work into that. So he's going to run that down. Tom's also going to talk about House Bill, and this is Ohio House Bill 235. And this legislation targets the problems at the Lima refinery. We talked about this on the show and how they're bringing out-of-state workers. The plant is going through a retooling, kind of a like a small shutdown. And normally, building trades brothers and sisters do this, but not the case because they got new owners. So they're classifying this as a high-hazard facility, and in the future, this legislation will require all construction contractors to only use labor that has completed a registered apprenticeship program and other safety certifications. So if passed, and hopefully it will, it'll give union construction a leg up on lots of maintenance work at refineries and other facilities. In fact, California, I understand, has a bill that's kind of similar to the one they're working on in the state of Ohio. And lastly, we're going to touch on what the IBEW electricians are doing. And these are all volunteers to do the hanging of thousands of Christmas lights in downtown Cleveland for the holidays. It's a great story, and they feature that every year. So Tom Jermuska will button up the show as our second guest. The House Rules Committee has unveiled the latest version of the Democrats' tax and social spending plan that they're aiming to pass through the budget reconciliation process. This is not an easy process, let's be honest, but they're trying. The latest version of the bill, which the Biden administration considers part of its Build Back Better agenda, includes significant increases to the size of financial penalties that labor enforcing agencies can levy against companies with existing violations. Specifically, the current spending plan allows the National Labor Relations Board to set penalties up to $50,000 against companies with existing unfair labor practices. And get this, that penalty could double in some cases. The bill also has provisions to expand the size of penalties for certain violations of the Fair Labor Standards Act and fines ordered by OSHA. For example, the maximum fine for an employer that violates child labor law and results in a death would rise from $50,000 to $601,000. $100,000. I would say that's a significant jump.
Yeah.
OSHA's ability to enhance its fining ability and likely its deterrent effect, too, would also increase. One example is that for repeat or willful violations by an employer under the current version of the bill, OSHA would be able to fine the employer up to $700,000. Right now, that maximum is $136,000. The bill would also permit OSHA to fine employers for a serious violation up to $70,000 and another large increase from the current maximum penalty of $13,000. In addition to increasing the financial penalties available to agencies that enforce labor violations, the bill would also enhance the budgets of labor law enforcement agencies, thereby giving them the ability to put these increased penalties to use. Wow, that's all I can say. This is monumental. If they can get this through, you know there's going to be a pushback from employers, but it's amazing what some in Congress are trying to do to make sure workers are safe. That's what this is all about. Let's be honest. We got a comment here from Liz Schuler, president of the Labor Federation. She said the reconciliation framework together with the bipartisan infrastructure bill is a pro-worker victory and exactly the type of progress working families need as we carry our country out of the COVID-19 pandemic. Liz went on to say, while there's still more work to be done on paid leave and other priorities, we are closer than ever to building back better. Keep your fingers crossed. That's all I got to say. Secretary of Labor Marty Walsh joined striking members of the Bakery, Confectionery, Tobacco Workers, and Grain Millers Local. This is Local 374-G. He joined them on the picket line last Wednesday in a powerful sign of support from the Biden-Harris administration. Walsh said, "Workplaces are stronger when all voices are heard. I'm proud to be part of an administration that is committed to empowering workers and ensuring everyone has a seat at the table." Anthony Shelton, who heads the Bakers Union, was with Walsh at the picket line outside the Kellogg's plant in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. And earlier in the day, Liz Schuler visited the Kellogg's picket line in Omaha, Nebraska, where she met with striking members of Local 50-G. The Michigan State AFL-CIO also hosted a massive rally for striking Kellogg's workers on Wednesday at the company's headquarters in Battle Creek, Michigan. So they are certainly rattling the cage, and I'm talking about administration officials. And finally, some good news here. Wages and salaries jumped in the 3 months ending in September by the most on records dating back 20 years. Pay increase 1.5% in the third quarter alone. That's up from 0.9% the previous quarter. The value of benefits rose almost 1% in the July-September quarter, more than double the preceding 3 months. According to the Associated Press, the data further illustrates the rising leverage that workers have gained in the job market this year, and they are commanding higher pay, more benefits, and other perks like flexible work hours. Millions of Americans are responding to rising wages by quitting their jobs for better paying positions in August, and we talked about this. Nearly 3% of American workers quit their jobs, which is a record high. A higher number of quits also means companies will have to raise pay to keep their employees who decide to stay working. And workers who switch jobs are seeing some of the sharpest income gains in decades. According to the Federal Reserve Bank down in Atlanta in September, job switchers saw their pay jump 5.4%. compared from the year before. That's up from just 3.4% in May and the biggest increase in nearly 20 years. So something is happening in America. And certainly, workers are in the lead. Gotta love that. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Lynn Montgomery, on behalf of the transport workers, coming up next.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
You're listening to America's Workforce, and this next segment brought to you by the North Coast Labor Federation.
Have you or a loved one been diagnosed with cancer after taking Zantac? If you have taken Zantac and have cancer, you may be entitled to compensation. The trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at KellyandFerraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
The United Steelworkers of America represent over 70,000 workers in the state of Ohio. Steelworker members enjoy the benefits of some of the best contracts of any workers in the world. Many of your friends, neighbors, and relatives are members of one of the most effective democratic unions in our country. With the pressures unorganized workers are under in today's economy, you need to join them. So call the Steelworkers Organizing Office at 216-292-5683 or toll free at 1-800-443-3752.
The United Auto Workers are one of the largest and most diverse unions in North America, with members in virtually every sector of the economy. Learn more about this proud sponsor of our program at UAW.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle, real simple, AWF Union Podcast. AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to our live line. Welcome back to the show. We had her on several months back. Lynn Montgomery is her name, and she's president of the Transport Workers Union 556. The website is TWU556.org. They have 17,000 members nationwide, and it's been a struggle with flight attendants. We've been talking about this on the show many, many times. Lynn Montgomery, how are we doing today? I know it's been tough for you and your crew there.
Yeah, I'm doing okay, Ed. Thanks so much.
So just wondering on these delays, you got a lot of national attention a couple of weeks back. I think it started on like a Thursday, Friday, and then it accelerated over the weekend. A lot of people waiting for days. Where are we with that right now, Lynn?
Well, we've recovered from the impact of that particular issue, but we continue to have operational issues throughout the system where flight attendants' lives are heavily impacted by having to be rescheduled, huge delays, and just a real need for changes to occur for better.
It's my understanding, I guess a lot of people, and the pandemic, I've said this on the show so many times, the pandemic has changed everything. I mean, we've got a record amount of strikes going on in the country right now. There's people quitting their jobs. August, there was over 4 million people that said, hey, I ain't working here no more. And I don't know where they're ending up, but this has affected so many people, including the airlines. So you're dealing with a lot of retirements, I take it. Is that part of the equation right now?
You know, we are seeing people leave and decide to resign more than ever before because the job is so much more difficult. It's so much more taxing. You don't get home when you're supposed to get home. Passengers can be hostile. And, you know, the pandemic has highlighted issues that were simmering before the pandemic. And with the effects now of the pandemic, it's really just reached a boiling point. Some of these things were there before, but now that the effects of the pandemic, it's not something people want to have to do anymore.
Lynn, you said it's become more taxing. Can we get into some details on that? I mean, all the airlines are dealing with the pandemic here. I mean, there's a lot of components, but and there's airlines that handle it better than others. And Southwest is still the most unionized of the airlines, is it not?
Yes.
Okay. Well, that's good to hear. Talk to me about the job and how that has changed. Can you give us some specifics on that?
So for flight attendants over the years, we've been asked to just do more and more and more, and our duty days are very long. We're less staffed these days. We're having some staffing issues because, you know, we had people leave the property when the pandemic hit and the flights were reduced dramatically. So we had people leave the property then, about 1,000, just under 1,000. And then we have a certain number of people on leave. They may have health issues that they can't work. And then, of course, the airline has imposed a health declaration policy that if you are exhibiting any symptoms of COVID-19, you shouldn't report to work, which can be, you know, as simple as a headache or other symptoms that are quite mild and can actually be things you would normally work with, come to work with. So we're facing all kinds of issues. And then operationally, the company seems to have issues with its technology.
Like what? What's the problem with the technology today?
The technology has gone down, where that has created an impact. The systems have gone down in the terminals, and it's gone down, you know, within the scheduling systems, and that creates a huge havoc because those systems will get you back on course if there is a delay or there's a weather. We were impacted by, as our company said, by the air traffic control shutdown that occurred in Florida, and 20% of our flights go through Florida. So that impacted many flight, about 20% of our flight attendants that were working on those pairings during that time.
Now, this might be a question for the air traffic controllers, and I've heard the technology needs to be upgraded. Is that a big reason why this technology is going down? Because they just can't handle the amount of travel going on right now? Is that part of it?
The issues that are occurring are more so occurring internally with Southwest Airlines, and then there's other airlines that have also experienced outages. We're so dependent on computer systems that when those computer systems fail, it has a huge ripple effect.
Now, what about fatigue? You mentioned that you're doing more. They're requesting you to do more. Obviously, that's got to lead to some burnout, right?
It really has led to burnout. Flight attendants are extremely, extremely exhausted, both mentally and physically. You know, working while the pandemic has been going on, during the whole time the pandemic's been going on, flight attendants have, you know, come to work and been told to come to work and then not come to work. They get rescheduled into days that can be very, very long. So you might expect to go to work an 8-hour day, and you might end up working a 14 to 17 hour day, which then makes your overnight very short. By the time you get to the hotel, you might be looking at 4 to 5 hours of sleep before you have to head out the next day. And mm-hmm. oftentimes, flight attendants don't have the chance to get food because of the limited restaurants that are open, the limited hours, and also when you get to the airports, the limited restaurants being open, and they're so long, the lines are so long, you wouldn't have time to get it without delaying the flight.
Oh, boy. Really, there's a lot of components here. Now, you mentioned earlier about people getting sick, and if you get COVID-19, for instance, you might have a temperature, you might be getting a headache, and so Southwest is telling them, well, you can't report for work. Now, what's this about the company requiring you to go to a company doctor to verify your illness? Can you explain what that's all about and how long that's been going on?
Yes, this is something that has been plaguing the flight attendants for some time now, since before the summer started, where our flight attendants are required, if they call in sick, to go to see a company doctor, which isn't the normal provisions under our contract. You can provide a doctor to remove points because we have an attendance points policy per our contract. But this is an action that actually was grieved by the union years ago, and then there was an arbitration decision that validated that the company could do this. However, during the middle of a pandemic, it's been a really poor practice on the company's part to not allow people to use their normal sick time without having to go see a strange doctor, a doctor they don't know, clogging up the healthcare facilities, urgent care facilities, when you know, really somebody may not need to go there in the middle of a pandemic. So we have taken a hard line against the company using these procedures and requiring flight attendants to go see a company doctor.
So it sounds like this is a union dispute right now that you're trying to work out then. Is that right?
It is a union dispute. Yes, we are grieving these actions, and we work with the company so that they, you know, don't implement them. However, they feel they have a need to implement them, and we strongly disagree that this is an appropriate action during a pandemic.
Now, is this something exclusive to Southwest or other airlines, and they're trying to follow the lead of other airlines? Do you know anything about that?
I am not sure what is happening at the other airlines. I know that some of them have had issues with being required to go see a company doctor instead of just being able to call in sick under your normal procedures.
Wow. Okay, Lynn, with everything that you just told me, it sounds like you're busy down there. I hear something ringing in the background, but that's okay. They can wait. But with all these things that you told me, and I don't even get into the crazy passengers, that'll be for the next segment here. But with everything that's going on, the people that are working, how's the morale? How's everybody holding up through all this?
The morale is the lowest I have ever seen it. At Southwest Airlines, our morale has generally been high. Generally, we feel like we're a family environment. But right now, it's a really divided work group, really exhausted, and not good at all. Something we've never seen at Southwest Airlines before. And something I think management isn't quite sure how to handle, because we've normally been the type of work group that will do anything for the success of our company.
Yeah.
But at
yeah.
this point, we actually can't do anymore. It's just not possible.
It's really sad because things have changed so much with Southwest. I mean, Southwest was like the happiest place to be on earth, next to Disney, of course. And it was amazing. Everybody said, oh, Southwest. And we still fly. My wife and I still fly Southwest. We love the airline. So it's unfortunate that the employees are just not being treated, because obviously the passengers are going to realize this. And it's so important. You want to continue good business practices. Lynn, I got to take a quick break here. Lynn Montgomery joining us. She's president of Transport Workers Local 556. The website is TWU556.org. You can follow them on Twitter. That's their Twitter handle, TWU556. And Lynn's personal handle is at Lynn Montgomery 2, and there's just one N in Lynn. We'll be back in a few minutes.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
You're listening to America's Workforce, and this upcoming segment is brought to you by the Ohio Federation of Teachers. Check them out online at oft-aft.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining, atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWatterson.com.
To Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And you can check us out on 6 platforms now. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and most recently the platform known as Stitcher. And when you get an opportunity, just sign up, receive our shows on a regular basis, and eventually give us a rating. We always appreciate a 5-star rating. Let's go back to our live line, rejoin Lynn Montgomery on behalf of the Transport Workers Local 556. She's based in Dallas, Texas, and they have about 17,000 members nationwide. All right, Lynn, Last time you were on, we were talking about all the craziness going on with passengers. Maybe they drank too much. I think they stopped serving drinks on some of the flights. I don't know where we stand with that right now. But we're talking about air rage. And the numbers are astronomical. And most of the time, it's people that just don't want to wear a mask. And is the mask mandate still in place on airlines? If I get on a plane, is that still pretty much the case?
It's still in place.
Still in place. Okay, and it'll probably be like that. So can you tell me some, I'm sure you're getting an earful from your coworkers. What's the latest on this? Are they starting to behave themselves? I mean, a lot of these got national media attention. Where are we right now?
Yeah, you know, I worked really hard to give some media attention to this matter, hoping that public awareness would really help eradicate the situation. However, it is not stopping. I just spoke to a flight attendant that was one of our flight attendants a couple weeks ago, that another customer hit her in the face because she had asked her to listen to the briefing that's required at the emergency exit row. If you sit at the exit row, you have a special responsibility of helping out in case of an evacuation. And she didn't want to listen to her. And it got violent. It's just insane. We have worked so hard, and TW International also passed a resolution at its recent convention to make this a forefront issue. Things like they're not serving alcohol, like you said, and to look into them serving alcohol in the airports where they can just allow you to walk around the terminal with alcohol, whether that's impacting it, and that should be limited or restricted. And then I think, and TW International agrees, that we should have more visible security in the gate area as a reminder to individuals and to be there to help if anything happens, you know, during the boarding and deplaning process. And then also, I still feel that an expansion of the federal air marshal program would help. Of course, increased fines have helped, but nothing else is really helping flight attendants in the midst of when this is happening. We need more more authority to be there.
Now, Lynn, I understand there's some significant fines for people that do crazy things on airplanes, and it's my understanding that President Biden told the FAA to actually double the fines. Yeah, here it is. I'm reading like $35,000 per incident. And in some cases, the passengers could face up to 20 years in jail. Now, am I understanding that even with that happening, people are still misbehaving, even with that hanging over their head? Is that right?
That's correct. They're still misbehaving.
Oh, my gosh, that is crazy. So what needs to be done here? I mean, you've got a very powerful union. You got 17,000 members. You've been vocal. You've testified. I mean, do we have to keep talking about this in order to make some significant changes or what?
Yeah, I think we're still continuing to work on bills to, you know, make the situation better. One of the things, too, that we're looking at is when the situation occurs and the flight attendants call for authorities, there tends to be an issue as who should govern this particular issue. So you have federal authorities that will come and say, no, this is really belong under local authorities. Local authorities will come and say, no, we need federal authorities. And a lot of passengers that misbehave are falling through the cracks. And that's something that needs to get remedied. That's a huge problem.
Yeah, I'm reading, too, that a lot of times the attendants talk to the managers, and there was not much of a follow-up. I saw in one study, 71% reported no follow-up at all. Is that still going on? I mean, so what it sounds like, people are getting away with a lot of wrong things right now, right?
I think that the added attention that the unions have given, that TW has given, and in with also AFA and APFA on this issue, I think that it is changing. The airlines are putting people onto their no-fly list, their traveler ban list.
Yeah.
more than they used to and before they used to. So I feel like there is a movement in the right direction. It's just still astounding that these issues keep occurring. It still is. But I think we've made some significant movement, and hopefully we'll continue to do that, and it will continue to help.
Well, unfortunately, until we get this behind us, I for the life of me, I can't see why anyone would want to go into your profession right now. I mean, you're going in there to be beat up. You mentioned working long hours. You go in there, you expect to work maybe 8 hours. It can turn into 14 or 15. You don't have time to get a meal because there's long lines at the airport. This does not bode well for the future, Lynn. I'm just wondering, are we just going to wait till things calm down before we rebuilding? Because I know you lost a lot of employees here since the pandemic started. What's your answer to that?
Well, the company is actively having new hire classes continue, and they are going to be hiring more flight attendants in the new year. I will say this, that Southwest Airlines flight attendants are incredible professionals who really care about their customers and the customer experience, and they are still delivering a great customer experience for most customers each and every day. They're funny, and they've got great attitudes even in light of everything that's happening. So I think it'll come back around. We're going to continue to work with the company to make the job better through our contract negotiations and just other ways, by, say, giving longer layovers in really fun places like Cancun, New Mexico, and other places, so that we can enjoy this job once again. And that's conversations we're having with management.
And Lynn, all I can say is be glad you have a strong union. I mean, the Transport Workers Union, dynamic union. I mean, they deal with the bus drivers, the subway drivers. They too have been assaulted. We stay on top of this here at America's Workforce. We are linked up with the Transportation Trades Department of the AFL-CIO. So I've been hearing the horror stories. So you're going to navigate through this. And again, having that union makes a big difference, doesn't it?
It absolutely does. And I think right now it's a real chance for American workers to realize their worth, and that the power of a labor union will bring real change to your working lives, because I see people nationwide needing these changes. No longer is it going to be okay to just expect more and more and more from corporations without giving. And that is something, if you join a union, that will happen for you. You will have a much stronger voice when you join a union.
Well said. Lynn, thank you so much for your time. Keep the faith, okay? I could tell you're struggling, but again, it's good to have a powerful union. It's good to have an airline that, you know, obviously the airline wants to be doing the right thing. They're trying, and this is a tough time, but hang in there and stay safe in doing that, okay?
Thanks, Ed. We're going to make it through.
You got it. TWU 556.org for more information. Lynn Montgomery, president of that local, right here on America's Workforce. All right, we're going to take a quick break here. When we come back, Mr. Tom Jermuska Jr. on behalf of the labor citizen.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as healthcare and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
The AFL-CIO is a proud sponsor of America's Workforce Radio. United by efforts to raise wages, listeners to this show and workers all across America are beginning to turn a corner and drive the economic debate. The AFL-CIO is comprised of 12.5 million working people from 56 unions, but we stand with and fight for everyone who is working for a better life. For more information about our Raising Wages agenda, go to AFLCIO.org.
Mesothelioma is a rare type of cancer caused by exposure to asbestos. If you were exposed to asbestos and have mesothelioma or lung cancer, the trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at kellyandferraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And welcome back. Don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle, real simple, AWF Union Podcast, AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the fine folks at the United Labor Agency, connecting people with employment. And you can find more at ulagency.org. Let's go to line number two and welcome one of our regulars, almost one of our regulars. We check in with Tom Jermuska on behalf of the Labor Citizen quite often. And the Labor Citizen is an industry newspaper dealing with the building trades. And we got a big event happening here in a couple of weeks. And I stand corrected. I said at the beginning of the show it was next week, but I'm excited about it. So I can't wait for it to happen. We're talking about National Apprenticeship Week. And it starts is the week of November 15th. Did I get that correctly, Mr. Jermuska?
You absolutely did, Flash. November 15th, we'll have a business week devoted to everything apprenticeship. Obviously, at the Labor Citizen and a lot of stuff we talk about here on AWF deals with the construction trades. But, you know, nationally, they're trying to promote the apprenticeship model much broader and wider. The gold standard, which without debate, and you really cannot find anyone to have a valid argument, is the apprenticeship model for union construction work. Registered apprenticeship programs, highly overseen by the Department of Labor, 4 or 5 years of in-depth training to learn a craft, learn a trade, lots of certifications. When you're finished with an apprenticeship program, you are not only 4 or 5 years into your career, contributing to your pension and all those things, but you 100% absolutely know everything you need to know to do the job safely, effectively, efficiently. And the best thing is because this training is rather universal across the country, doesn't matter where you go, what crew you're working on, within the construction trades, an apprenticeship is the way to go. And as you said, it's a big week. The Biden administration is really pushing this. They're pro-union, you say it all the time, but they're really pushing the apprenticeship program. How many times have we talked about the labor shortage and there's lots of open jobs out there? Same thing in construction, plenty of opportunities out there. This is the path in. It's not for everyone, of course, but the ones that make it and succeed, they're set. It's a middle-class career lifestyle. You're contributing, you know, benefits most of the time for you, for any family members you have. It's hard to beat if the work's for you. And as you said, we're going to do a special section on it. We've done it for the last few years. Not only will we have a number of informative articles talking about everything I was just talking about, really kind of the primer. What is an apprenticeship? What do I need to know? You know, help you decide, is it for me? Is it not for me? The other really important thing for all of our subscribers in the state of Ohio, across the state, is we have contact information, names, addresses, phone numbers, email addresses, where possible, websites of every trades training division in the entire state, broken down by trade and by craft. So if you're looking to become a painter, you know, here's where you apply, here's who you contact. You want to be a laborer, here's the information you need. And it's the closest one to you. So whether you're in Cincinnati, Columbus, Toledo, parts in between, over in Cleveland, Youngstown, you'll find the geographical locations that's the closest, helps you make all those decisions. So after you've read the special section, now you know what to do and how to get started. You know, some of this stuff changes all the time, when classes start, how many people they'll be able to take. COVID has shrunk some of these apprenticeship classes, Flash. So, you know, there are some things, and it's important to do your research, of course. The last thing anyone wants is to join, and then 6 months in, a year in, you drop out because that you've taken a spot for someone else. So we're really excited. We think it's a great week for the trades, and we hope this special section can help a lot of people.
Tom, you mentioned the pandemic and how that affected everything. And I know a lot of the programs had to go virtual as a result of that. Are they back now, too, or are some still going virtually? Well, you know anything about that?
Yeah, but it's a mixed bag. You know, there's certain parts of this learning process that you really have to be in person. A welding booth, for example, doesn't really work over a computer. What I've been told and what we've been hearing is it's kind of a mishmash. There are certain classes that it's still best, and you can certainly do virtually. But when you get more hands-on, you're getting the experience of those instructors. Now, what they're doing is they're having smaller, or they're spreading out those hands-on portions. Some of the classes in total are smaller. In other cases, they're doing them in shifts. You know, I know a lot of, like specifically with welding, they've just spread them out, you know, every other welding bay at the training center and things like that. So I think they're finding that there actually might be a place for some virtual learning that's probably going to hang around, especially in situations where these people have to drive a couple hours to get to class, or in some cases they're coming for a week and hanging around. You know, all the crafts and all the trades do it just a little differently, but I think it's eventually going to become a pretty valuable tool.
Well, I tell you, you do a great job on this. There's a lot of work that goes into this, and you've been doing this for a number of years, and this covers the entire state of Ohio. I mean, all the trades, all the information on what the apprenticeship program does specifically to that trade, who to contact. It's got all the information there. Tom, to your knowledge, is anyone else in the country doing something like this? I mean, the Labor Citizen has been in public. How many years now? Is it 7, 8 years?
Officially, Flash, for us at the Labor Citizen with BMA, we've been at it going, and we're coming up on 8.5, 9 years. Obviously, there's been a form of the Labor Citizen. It's the oldest continually published labor magazine in America. We're over 120, 130 years. California's got a pretty robust trade publication. I don't know exactly what they do, but they do a lot. If anyone was doing something similar, some of the stuff out in California would be my best guess. But I've never seen one. I can tell you that.
Okay. Do check that out. And when will this publication be coming out?
It'll be inside, right in the middle of our November edition, and it'll be reaching people. Our hopes are Monday or Tuesday of National Apprenticeship Week. We have a number of training centers that have bought extras. They're going to have them hanging around. They're going to pass them out. Our friends down in Columbus at ACT Ohio, they've ordered some. They're going to be distributing them when they're at career fair booths. There's a number of advertisements specifically with information in there. So, you know, same time Apprenticeship Week's come out, we're going to be right there with it.
I like that. All right. Looking forward to that. Okay, let's move to the State House here. And I'm reading about this piece of legislation. It's House Bill 235. And I bring this up because this bill targets the problems that we talked about on the show at the Lima Refinery. And I know the Labor Citizen covered that as well. Why don't you just start from the beginning on that? Explain what's going on at the Lima Refinery and how this bill is actually going to change things. Go ahead.
Of course, Flash. So at the Lima Refinery, which has been there for generations, they have new owners. A company called Cenovus, I believe based in Canada, took over for Husky. And when they did, they decided it was in their best interest to bring in crews that they were more familiar with for what's called the annual maintenance, annual shutdown. They shut down the entire plant for a short period of time to do complete top-to-bottom maintenance, inspections, fix things, clean things, critical to long-running operations. Every day you're not refining the materials you have on site is a lot of money, millions of dollars. So you want to be fast. You want to be efficient. They decided to go with their own folks. They went non-union. They went outside the state of Ohio, people who've worked at other Cenovus properties. They felt it was best. Of course, there's a lot of questions about that. They've never been on this plant. They've never seen it. They're not familiar with it. And they also come in, take a paycheck, and they leave the state. That's tax dollars that we're losing, too. In Lima, not the biggest city for those people that aren't familiar, it's devastating. There's been generations of trades members who have been working at the Lima refinery doing this kind of work. And this year, they're not doing the shutdown. So it's a big blow. It hurts the community. Long-term, it could be devastating. So House Bill 235, like you said, addresses it. It goes much larger than that, but it's definitely the spark that led to us. Flesh, what we're talking about is any facility in the state of Ohio that's deemed high hazard. And you can see why a refinery might be deemed that way. It's a national security issue. I got to believe nuclear plants are in there as well. What it says is any construction work on high hazard sites in the state of Ohio, if this bill passes, becomes law, of course, you must ensure that the crews on those sites have been through registered apprenticeship programs, and any journey workers on those sites have comprehensive safety certifications and not the basic OSHA 10. We're talking at least OSHA 30 and up. So not only have everyone been through the rigorous training that I was just talking about that is guaranteed through the registered apprenticeship programs, but your journeymen have been continued to keep up on all their training. If passed, this will be across the state. All the refineries, any other high-hazard sites, they're going to phase it in again, so it's not like right away, but basically the first year it's enacted, I believe they're hoping this is 2022, you're going to have at least 45% of all workers check these boxes for being coming through registered apprenticeship programs. That basically means they're union construction workers. And then it escalates, and I think after 3 years, it's something, if it's not 100% flash, it's going to be something in the high 90s. So everyone there has the training. They're qualified. You're not going to worry about things exploding or people doing work, not knowing what they're doing, leaving the state, not coming back for another year, and doing something wrong that messes things up. So there is a definite benefit. Flash, you and I were talking previously. California enacted a law like this. For our podcast listeners out there, you may remember hearing about Senate Bill 5. It's been about 4 years now. Great success, great addition of work for union trades out there in the building and construction industries, and it's working. It's safer. Fewer injuries on the jobs. It's definitely working. And I really believe there's a lot of sponsorship of this bill here in Ohio in the House. Over 20, 25 House members already have signed on as co-sponsors. I think you're going to see some success with this. And I think in the end, it's going to fix the problem in Lima and probably make things safer across the state.
That's great. Well, that's one to watch. House Bill 235 in the state of Ohio. And just a little bit of time left here. A little shout out here on behalf of our brothers and sisters at the IBEW. It's hard to believe that the holidays are right around the corner. My gosh, Thanksgiving just a couple of weeks away. And then the lights in downtown Cleveland. And what do you want to say about Local 38 here, Tom?
Flash, I've made it a vow to try and do this every year because I think these things are vastly underreported. And it's not just 38 is the one we focus on here in Cleveland, but we've found there's similar stories in a lot of other places. They're hanging the Christmas lights in downtown Cleveland, and come Thanksgiving weekend, it's a giant party down there, celebrations, singing, dancing. They turn on lights. Tens of thousands of lights have to be checked, fixed, and then properly and safely hung. So the members of 38 volunteer their time on a weekend. It was actually just this past weekend, Flash. I believe they're done. If there's any final touches, they'll do it next Saturday. Some of the members bring their kids with them. They turn into an enjoyable event. The kids get to see what mom and dad do for a living. But in the end, you're saving lots of hours of overtime for public worker crews, and you know it's being done right and it's being done safely. They deserve recognition. They don't ask for the recognition, but they deserve it. These are the kind of things that unions do all across the country all the time. They're part of the communities where they live, and they help out. They use their skills and expertise to make their communities better. And they don't ask for anything for it, but we like to at least pat them on the back. We're going to have pictures in the next Labor Citizen thanking them for their work at Local 38 here in Cleveland. And we'll try and acknowledge a few others in other places as well.
Good stuff. All in the Labor Citizen, produced by BMA Media. Tom, great job. Stay safe, and we'll talk down the road. Okay, brother?
Really appreciate it, Flash. You have a good one.
And that's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Tomorrow, the Ohio AFL-CIO and the latest from the News Guild. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.